Today is Wednesday. It's April 24th, 2024. Happy Palindrome Day. It's also 2:44 in the afternoon. If I had lined it all up, John, I would have had 2:4.
Are you close?
It's 4:24:24. Read backwards is 4:24:24. And then I could have set it up at 2:40. Anyway, welcome to the Mincing Rascals podcast. I'm John Williams. Portions of this are broadcast Saturday nights on WGN Radio at 8 o'clock. Send us your email. We'd like to comment on your comments. Just email John Williams at WGNradio.com. You can hear me weekdays on WGN from 10 to 2.
I'm Kate Plies, former reporter columnist from Chicago and now running the Chicago history website, Roseland, Chicago, 1972.
I'm Marge Halperin, a communications consultant with a few decades of political experience. As a pundit, I'm currently featured on Canada's CTV, kind of an all-around expert at challenging authority.
There's a good moniker. Good. There's a good line.
I'm John Hansen. I'm on WGN Radio Monday to Thursdays at 6 and at Block Club Chicago.
I'm Eric Zorn, the humble but lovable publisher of the Picayune Sentinel Substack newsletter.
Speaking of catchy phrases, I wrote this down. Today, the podcast by people who know Chicago for people who care about Chicago. But then I thought,
that was
Marge just did the Taylor Swift heart, which was, or not Taylor Swift, the Caitlin Clark heart. But then I thought that sounds like the people who are listening, they don't know Chicago. They or
just the first half of that is fine, right? The podcast for people who know and care about Chicago. You don't have to. Obviously, those of us who are on the panel.
Right.
Must know. And
so what did you say? This is the podcast for people who know and care about Chicago. Right?
And if you don't know Chicago, we're going to make you care about it.
Okay, is that the second line, Marge? No?
The podcast for smart people from people who think they're smart.
There you go. Who among us?
Beware the new artist's rendering of a domed stadium on the lake. The Bears have unleashed the artwork, and a new facility just south of the current one looks terrific. The way we saw a casino on the river or a baseball stadium in the South Loop, it's easy to look at these things and go, oh, I want one of those. The Bears president, Kevin Warren, said today he loved everyone at the press conference. And Mayor Brandon Johnson said he loves everyone, too. And then they had a prayer, and the preacher loved everyone, including the Bears. Mm-hmm. And you will love this. The mayor said it will happen without any new taxes on Chicagoans. Mm-hmm. He almost said, read my lips.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
John, did you get a chance to see much of this?
No, but I did watch the renderings afterwards, the video. And like you said, there's never a rendering I've ever seen that I didn't love.
It's fabulous.
I like the way the colonnades are kept and how there's a park in the middle. And they have all these fine people in the videos, AI-generated images of people that are happy playing football. I imagine what great outreach to the public to bring people together. And there's no doubt that this would improve our current situation in terms of bringing things to the city that we can't have right now, right?
If you're familiar with Wrigley Field, they have that Gallagher Way, the little green space off of Clark between the street and the stadium. And they have now turned what is Soldier Field. They leave the colonnades up, but then they've got this massive Gallagher Way, a green space with softball diamonds where you could hang out and play frisbee.
Everything we've always ever wanted and complain about when it's not there.
I hope they don't charge to use that green space the way they do Gallagher Way. You can't go there and have a beer when the Cubs are playing, but that's a problem down the road.
As I've mentioned on this show before, I live in the South Loop. I got a view of Soldier Field, the current Soldier Field, depending on what window I stand in front of. And here in the neighborhood, we're watching very closely what's going on. And I got to tell you, I do believe that Kevin Warren has lived here since 2019. I believe that the mayor had the time of his life watching a Bears game with Kevin Warren. I'm not sure much of else that they said today was actually true. That's an exaggeration. But my point is that there was a whole lot that they said that was not true. I think the thing that sticks in my craw the most is this idea that it's an unprecedented private investment and there will be no new taxes on those of us who live here in this state. That is actually not true. They're going to take the existing hotel motel tax of 2% that currently is supposed to fund the old stadium deals, the one that we still owe $50 million for Sox Park and Well, it depends on how you figure it, up to $640 million for the current Soldier Field. They're not going to increase that, but they're going to extend it out 40 years, another 10 years. That's a new tax. That's 10 years worth of tax revenue that we don't get to put toward homelessness, development in neighborhoods that actually need it, the CTA, the pension problem, the you name it, all the things that have been the priorities for the city. Yeah. And I think what gets me, well, the second point, let me just say this first. The idea that this economic impact, $8 billion in how many years? They didn't exactly say 4,000 jobs. Is that in addition to the ones that are currently there, or are they counting the ones that are currently there? And I don't know how many there are. But don't worry, because all the economic impact came from an independent consultant that they hired. Well, they hired them, so they're not independent. We need to hire our own. We need to stop governing by shiny object and go back to the processes that represent good government.
But let me ask you this, Marge.
Sounding like Austin Burke.
Does the extent, you are, and you're doing a fine job of it, but do you think that an extension of an existing tax is the same as a new tax? Because that's the hair we're splitting here, right? The 2%.
There's money. Multiply it. I don't know the number. I would do the math. But 10 years worth of the 2% tax is money that we would otherwise expect to have in the coffers for something else.
Okay. But is an extension of an existing tax the same as a new tax? Because that's part of where the public financing is coming from, right? In theory, that 2% would roll off. Those bonds would be retired, but no, we'll just keep that in place, that 2% on hotels.
The one major difference is this is the kind of tax that's easier to hide.
That's just one example of how Orwellian that entire news conference was. And I do understand the whole point was to sell it to us, but it is Orwellian to claim that there are no new taxes when that 2% hotel tax was sold to us 20 years ago as something that was just for those bonds. It was supposed to end. It was not supposed to go on.
Did you buy that then?
I don't even remember that.
Yes. That's a tollway that was supposed to
go on forever and ever and ever.
But you
so
knew
they,
it.
They several times, both Warren and Mayor Johnson referred to the Illinois Facility Sports Authority, or whatever its entire name is, as something that was set up to do this. We are just asking for it to do what it was meant to do. No, it was meant to fund those two things and not to go on and on and on and on. If you wouldn't mind me telling you my favorite Orwellian example.
Okay.
Would not believe how many times they actually connected this plan to Daniel Burnham and all but said it was actually in the Daniel Burnham plan.
Really?
I mean, they practically said that.
Well, the Friends of the Parks weren't at that
shameless
press conference.
Right. No, they did not. It really was shameless. Mayor Johnson, when he was asked, he said, he was asked, the question from one of the reporters was, how are you going to sell this as a progressive goal to be spending money on this stadium, investing, you know, like $1 billion in this stadium? And he said, we're investing in people. And
yeah,
then he kept saying that over and over again.
He's investing in rich people.
I just love how everything, we have the world's best restaurants and world's best hotels, the world's finest lakefront. These guys were just going nuts about how they just love how great Chicago is.
A bunch of haters today.
The Burnham thing is actually pretty funny, because the whole Burnham's thing is forever open, clear and free. I forget the order of the adjectives, but this is clearly not part of Burnham's vision for the lakefront. But Johnson was saying, well, there's going to be more green space, and it's fascinating to watch him turn around. But let me anticipate what John Hansen's going to say, which is the thought that I have too, which is that if we do bring a Super Bowl to Chicago, and if we do bring tractor pulls, we bring the NCAA Final Four here, if we bring the Big Ten Championship here,
a Beyonce concert?
They already do those, but they're going to be
20 days. 20-day sit-down.
Yeah, 20-day residency. That was kind of an interesting idea. But the idea that performers are not coming to Chicago because there's not a big enough venue and it might rain or something like that, I'm not sure. Take that aside. We're not going to get a Super Bowl here unless we have a covered stadium. We're not going to get an NCAA Final Four here. So those things will bring in additional revenue and create additional jobs. It doesn't strike me as completely unreasonable proposition that will benefit the city. Now, I would like to see, and I think Marge will say, I'm anticipating what everyone's going to say, which is that we'd like to have an independent analysis, really, yes, of that, rather than have the Bears go, hey, we asked our people, and they said it's a great idea. So anyway, John Hansen, did I channel you correctly?
You did in some ways. Of course it's not going to reach the economic impact that these non-independent people do. That's just baked into the equation of what happens. We know from all these cities, they do not recoup all the money they spend on the stadium, and I still don't think that is immediately as qualifying as this is not a good deal then for the city. How often do we talk about being a world-class city? That's what I use as an argument for why NASCAR can be here. If we're going to be a big city and act like a big city, we need big places to gather. And we may not recoup all the money that the city puts into it, but that's for a lot of the things that we spend money on as a city, not recouping all the money. When has that been the threshold for whether you do something or not? There's going to be people that don't like it, of course, and it may not even out in terms of economics, but there's a lot of people in the city that pay property taxes that go to schools. They don't have kids in the schools. Like, I mean, not everything you want to spend money on is going to be something you love.
You don't benefit from having well-educated youth in our
community. Your property values go higher, too, by having good schools. I'm not against that argument. I'm just suggesting that there are things that a lot of people pay for that they don't get a direct benefit out of.
But it's not
that's baked into citizenry.
It's not that somebody doesn't want this. It's that they think that those guys should pay for it.
Okay, but they don't own the land. Right. So here's the deal. This is the deal to keep them in the city. So if you're fine with the Bears moving to Arlington Heights, then your argument is completely solid because you're fine with them moving, owning their own land, owning their own stadium like every team wants to do these days. So you could argue that the Bears are making a sacrifice here by not owning that property. They're pouring money into the public space, asking for a little bit more public money to make this something that can benefit the city as a whole. I think that's a fair trade.
Way to channel the Bears' argument. Good job.
And I didn't even watch the press conference.
You didn't have to, but apparently. But that's a false choice, John. The idea that it's our lakefront, forever free, clear, and open, or it's Arlington Heights is a false choice. That's what they want us to come away thinking. There is a beautiful site, Michael Reese, just south of here, that has great potential that they refuse to look into other than an inch deep. They dismiss it as too narrow. That's not true. There are plans out there that will clearly accommodate what they want.
They don't want those other sites, Marge.
But that doesn't mean those aren't options and very good options. And this is part of the independent analysis that we need. We can't take their word for it, that if you don't put us on the lakefront, we're homeless in Chicago and we're going to have to leave. I don't think that's true.
I guess I'm fine with an independent analysis. But I don't care if the numbers don't square up.
To the tune of an extra $1 billion?
Maybe.
I would be more forgiving of the money aspect because I totally see your point, John, that we should not necessarily expect to get every cent of it back because there are a lot of intangibles. Definitely. I definitely see that. But the fact that they truly do not feel any responsibility to explain why they need to take up this spot on the lakefront, which doesn't just take up that spot on the lakefront, but further degrades the ability of the city to protect the rest of lakefront property.
Why?
Because every single thing chips away at the lakefront protection ordinance's ability to keep these things out. It was a very facile explanation.
But Kate, you're saying that it's a slippery slope, that if we let the Bears develop this property on the lakefront that way, that somewhere else on the lakefront, somebody else is going to have an argument to have some sort of commercial or public-private development. Is that what we're worried about here?
I, number one, don't think it's right to have a giant dome stadium on the lakefront. This is just as big as the Lucas thing that was going to go there. Basically, the plan that they laid out is going to remain Soldier Field, but just the colonnades, then the giant dome stadium, where the parking lot, where the little parking garage is now, will be a giant dome stadium. Then, and this kind of got buried, but the south parking lot they acknowledge they're looking into making that a double-decker parking garage.
We have to have a place for people
then
to park,
instead of instead of flat space, which unfortunately is paved, but at least is still flat, you can see over it, is going to be a double-decker parking garage, which I believe would make it much larger than the little round one. And then McCormick Place.
Plus a hotel, right?
Yeah,
they're being cagey about a hotel.
It's the same footprint, though. We've already essentially allowed that to be used for the purposes of a football team, a football stadium, football fans. They're not going any further south, and they're not going any further north. When you look at that rendering, don't you think that's an upgrade to that plot of land? I guess you get to look over a parking lot, but it's a parking lot, and the lake is just another half mile up. I value the lake. I moved back to Chicago so I could be near it.
I feel the same way. I'm trying not to disrespect anyone's opinions.
I
love the idea of having more space, and the Burnham plan is brilliant. We are so lucky to live in a city that values that. The green space is so important from the south side to the north side into Northwest Indiana, all that. How much more space is how much more space is this actually taking? And I don't buy the slippery slope argument, because we have heated arguments about every new development that ever happens near the lakefront, and not all of them win. The Lucas Museum as an example. So sometimes the other side wins on this argument. So what's a little bit more of what we have of miles and miles of beautiful green space?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That is the slippery slope. Why not this? Why not this?
Because we do debate
that's what
people
happen. Say every single time.
But sometimes your side wins on that. And it didn't happen.
The way Daniel Burnham looked at it, and the way the Lakefront Protection Ordinance is written, is we're supposed to win on that all
the time. But there wasn't a Final Four or a Super Bowl when Daniel Burnham was drawing up his plans.
You're a Lakefront originalist.
Why does that have to be on the Lakefront? The Michael Reese site is wonderful. In terms of transportation, it is right next to
the I think that is a red herring. The Michael Reese site
quite close
It's not ours to decide, Kate. I mean, you can lead it.
Why wouldn't that?
It's not your team, because it's not your team. The team gets to go wherever the team wants to go. Your Honor, I'd like to amend that sentence.
For it.
Objection.
The team is paying for it, though, too, and they have a right to decide where they want to play.
My
and if they want to stay in the city, this is part of the deal.
Let me ask the question this way, John and John. If this is such a great idea, why not have the independent analysis that is the basis of every sound government expenditure that we demand for all other budget items? Why not take the time? And I don't think it's more than 3 to 5 months. We're not in a hurry. He's in a hurry. They gave this dire, you know, every year we delay, it's going to cost the taxpayers another $150 million, whatever. But if it's such a great idea, let's prove it out independently, compare it to an appropriate analysis of Michael Reese or any other site anyone thinks is viable. I know U.S. Steel's not in the running, but too bad. You know, let's see a real analysis. Then we'll decide. And on the other hand, be careful about how you're throwing the money around, because they gave this big analysis, their analysis of who's paying for what. And the woman who gave that presentation ended up saying, usually with a stadium, it's a 50-50 partnership, but we're getting a 70% private investment. First of all, that's not usually the truth. Look at SoFi in LA and all the new stadiums now, even Wrigley, they're paying for their own stadium. Yeah. It's not 50-50 at all. Those were the old days. That's what we used to do. Secondly, the 70% included the hotel motel tax. They added that in. Go back and listen to what she said. That's our money. That's not theirs. It's still 50-50. I think the independent analysis is critical. Then we decide if we want to invest. And maybe we would say to the Bears, I know you wanted the lakefront, but we're throwing our $1 billion into Michael Reese. You want to come along? And I'll bet they do.
I think independent review is absolutely on point. I don't disagree
with
that.
I do, too.
But I will just say about SoFi and Wrigley, those teams own their stadiums outright, so they should.
Well, they could own it at Michael Reese.
In Arlington Heights. Well, any analysis you're going to perform is going to have to somehow figure in these intangibles, which can become tangible when you're talking about what the perceived value of living in Chicago, staying in Chicago is for people. And you know, you make a big city, you have a world-class city, it has facilities like this, it makes you feel like staying and not decamping for Wyoming or somewhere where the taxes are lower. So there are these benefits, and that it seems to me that some of these public officials who want these stadiums, who want these building things, aren't in the pocket of the Bears. They believe in this civic pride thing, and of course Mayor Johnson just over the top as usual, talking about a better, stronger, safer. This is going to make Chicago safer. This is, you know, I thought he was going to talk about the soul of Chicago and the way he was carrying on.
Didn't he?
I didn't hear every word. I went back and watched the YouTube video of the entire news conference at double speed because it was so tedious in places.
Wow.
I think that there are definitely benefits to things like this that are truly intangible and that you can't just dismiss, because if your city had to come out, you know, net profit, net proceeds, you would have the lakefront itself is a huge net loss, right? I mean, yep. The lakefront itself is really valuable land that we're not selling to developers, and thank God.
Jeanette Taylor had said a few weeks ago, let's see some real public benefit here. She suggested the Bears, as part of the deal, make investments in adopting community-based schools, building new parks in other parts of the city, not just the lakefront. And the mayor gushed about, well, Kevin Warren truly understands public benefit. And by that, I think he means building this green space where high schools can play. They have to come downtown and play there. That's not helping the communities. I wonder why her comments fell on such deaf ears at City Hall. I thought that was a pretty smart idea.
I have a question, Mark. Yeah. If the Bears committed to some of that, would you ever get on board with something like this where the Bears want this?
After I saw the analysis, I want a real analysis. Then ask me the question.
But you
can't answer it. Some of it, as Eric said, is not measurable, but a whole lot of it is. Let's take a look at this. Net of what otherwise happens, what I said at the top of the show about the jobs, 4,000 jobs is great. Are there already 3,000 there? I don't have any idea. But, you know, you have to do it net. That's what an independent economic analysis is.
Sure, sure.
Then ask me, maybe.
I can't think of anything sketchier than bringing this public this way. Already the city is all into it and presenting this as a done deal.
Yeah, that's true.
They made it very clear that they want this done right away. It's got to be done right now. When Kevin Warren was asked, do you expect this to get, you know, the bonding stuff to get passed by the Illinois legislature in the current session or in the fall veto session? He was like, it has to be done in May. It has to be done in May.
Maybe they do so at their own peril, because here's J.B. Pritzker's statement. Let me start out by saying that I'm a Bears fan. That is bad news for the Bears. And then he goes on to say, before I was governor, I was a businessman. And as you know, I've been very active in attracting business to Illinois. That's something I do as a role in protector of the taxpayer dollars. I remain skeptical, and I wonder whether it's a good deal.
The way they're presenting this and trying to ram it down everybody's throats,
yeah,
literally by May, which is in a few weeks, I can't think of anything sketchier and
more
suspicious.
I literally would not interview contractors to replace the gutters on my house in that. Literally, I have taken longer on a project like that than they want to take on this stadium.
Joe Ferguson, the head of the Civic Federation, says they're trying to throw a fastball through a car wash without it getting wet.
Nice.
That's a good one.
And I don't know, does anyone have their finger to the wind about what's going on in Springfield about this? How members of the General Assembly who don't live in Chicago are going to feel about Mayor Johnson telling them how wonderful Chicago is and how we've got to keep Chicago wonderful and give us money so we can do that.
Yeah, and I imagine Northwest Suburban, the voting block up there is not going to be too happy.
You mean around Arlington Heights?
Yeah.
It's not super popular right now. One of the reporters at the conference specifically said that Chris Welch was asked about that already today and had said that if it came up today, it would totally not fly.
Don Harmon said he wants the two to work together, the Sox and the Bears. This is the Bears striking out on their own to claim all the money that's left.
Oh, they don't want to be with the Sox, who are striking out enough on their own.
I served that up, didn't I?
Thank you for that one, Marjorie.
Will you insert a rim shot?
I think all these questions about what is Springfield, why isn't Chris Welch committed? This is what today is all about. They're trying to push this across the finish line to make it seem fait accompli. And then if you're not with it, you're against it. And I don't think that's right either. The process I don't agree with, even if I like the end result.
There's $900 million that is not covered by the hotel motel tax. I wasn't sure.
The tax is $700 million. And then there's supposed to be another $900 million. I haven't squared up the advance reports with the numbers they gave today, so I'm not clear. But I think you're right. There's $900 in infrastructure that the city would automatically take care of. Then the $700 million from the Sports Finance Authority.
And Mayor Johnson said no new taxes. So I don't know, where's the money come from if it's not new taxes and it's not the hotel?
Where's the balance come from?
That the hotel tax is not a new tax. So since they're going to be getting
But that's still not enough. But Eric's point is that's still not enough. So we still have a balance due, right, Eric? Is that what you're asking about?
Well, I couldn't exactly follow their argument on that. And I would wait for the Friends of the Parks or some other, the Civic Federation, some of these places to really dive into those numbers and tell us where that money's going to come from.
100 more years on the parking meters.
It wasn't clear.
Kevin Warren said it. We believe there are state and federal dollars out there to pay for the infrastructure.
Right. If you're a lawmaker down in Carbondale or Springfield or Champaign or anywhere downstate or the Quad Cities, do you just say it's Chicago's hotel tax, let them build their stadium, I don't care? Is that what you say? What are they going to ask?
I think you say that. You say, I do care, and I'm not going to vote against it, but there's not enough of them down there anyway. Heck, Madison County wanted to cede from the union or the state as it is. Even if it was a good deal, even if it's going to cost 10 cents, I don't think you're going to get much support downstate, Eric. But I also don't think you need it downstate, right?
Also, most of them were St. Louis Rams fans, and they don't have a team anymore because they didn't fund a stadium in there.
You're making the assumption that all the Chicago legislators are for it, and I don't believe that's true. I've talked to several who just say there is zero appetite in Springfield for helping a privately owned stadium. Yeah.
Kelly Cassidy,
a privately owned team.
Okay, but one last question for you all. I mean, if we agree that a beautiful new stadium, and Kate, I heard what you said about the aesthetics of it and a parking deck, and that's not a small concern, but if we could have that vision that they've displayed in this video and it didn't cost too much. Marge is still shaking her head no. Because my question was going to be, what's the line? If we're paying $2 billion and that's too much, is a billion too much? Is half a million? How about if it was zero? Where's the line where you would sign off on it?
I think you're asking a different question than I would ask. I'm asking, what else can we do? What's the real choice here? What are the options? Let's thoroughly vet and see if it brings us back to the lakefront and then have the conversation. I don't think it will. I think an honest study of the Michael Reese site and maybe others will give us also beautiful views, gorgeous aerial glitzy videos and all that in a dome stadium. I think all that's possible without going down that slope on the lakefront. And I agree with Kate about the precedent. I don't like it. I think that's what Friends of the Park is going to say based on conversations I've had with them. That's what they're ready to say. And they've been to court to protect that space before, and they'll do it again. But I don't think they should have to.
I would like them to stay downtown. But
I haven't been to a game in 20 years. I watch them all on TV. It's a big TV show as far as I'm concerned. And I don't care where the studio is particularly. But
well, that's my attitude, Eric. If they stayed at Soldier Field and played outdoors for the next 100 years, I'd be okay with that. I'm not going to go either way. I'm not going to go to Arlington Heights. I'm not going to go to the new stadium. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to watch it on TV. In our last two episodes, we talked about Dexter Reed, the 26-year-old black man ostensibly pulled over for a seatbelt violation, which led to a police shootout in which he may have fired first and police may have returned fire 79 times in 41 seconds. The math has changed a little bit since we last spoke. I think the number we had originally was 96 shots, but maybe that's minus the 17 that maybe Dexter Reed fired. Either way, there was a shootout, and we don't have a lot of information about it in the last week. But Reed's mother has filed a civil rights lawsuit saying that the stop was unlawful and that the police response was outrageous. Among the other things, the 81-page suit also notes that the officers failed to render immediate medical assistance. As of today, we still don't know how many bullets struck Mr. Reed. That's just sort of an update on where we are.
It troubles me that it's been so long since this event. Now it's been, what, more than a month now, and we don't have an autopsy report. We don't have any report on the exact number of shots that either gun was fired. We don't know whether the officers have been interviewed yet. There's still this lack of information coming out about this that leads to speculation. I don't know that it's all surprising that the family filed lawsuits. Every time this happens, the families file lawsuits, and I think they realize that in many cases, and this is probably going to be another one, the city's just going to say, you know, it would cost us more to fight this, and it might cost us more to lose this than it's going to cost for us to pay you $5 million, $10 million to go away, which they do quite a lot. So I don't know. I haven't read the suit, so I don't know if there's anything new in there, but I haven't heard anything. I haven't seen anything new reported in the last week.
Well, it does get to the crux of the lead up, like what happened. I think that's something we all want to know the answer to, whether it comes through a civil suit or it comes through investigation. I think that's important. I hadn't heard that. I always thought the line was that it was 96 officer shots, not that 17 may have come from Dexter Reed. Although that, does that change the, yeah. the count? No, what I mean, seriously.
Yeah. No, it doesn't really change things.
Well, no, maybe I'm making an unpopular point, but I just want to talking off the top of my head. Originally, I had thought that Dexter Reed fired once or twice, and there was 96 shots in return, which seemed, of course, why would that possibly be necessary? Having not been there and not been a part of it, I don't know. If he fired 17 shots, each of the officers roughly fired 17 shots back. Does that change any of the calculus in your mind for over shooting back? Am I crazy?
Well, that isn't how it went. The one officer fired the majority of shots, many of them after he was lying motionless on the ground.
Fair. No, you're right.
Well, I think they said he fired three times after Dexter Reed came out of the car and
was on the ground.
Was on the ground.
But they were definitely saying that one officer, the 23-year-old officer, clearly very new, but he fired 50 shots, they said.
Yep.
That's 50 out of 96, or it's 50 out of 76. If you split the rest between the remaining three officers versus either the 11 shots we were first told of from Dexter Reed, or if he fired 17, it is far more of a proportional response.
Well, that's John's point.
That's what I was saying. Maybe not for that one officer. Right, exactly.
I don't know that there's a huge distinction between 79 shots and 96 shots. If Dexter Reed is continuing to fire, this is something we ought to know by now. Did he fire twice? Did he just once? I don't know. How many times did he fire? But the thing is, I'm not going to judge the police response on this because they didn't know if he had what kind of firepower he had in his car. They didn't know what he was doing in there because he had shot and they all sort of scattered and ran away. They didn't know if there was somebody in the back seat because there were tinted windows. There are a lot of things they don't know. And when you fire at a police officer, you're going to get a huge response until they're sure that the threat is taken care of.
Right. Right.
And I understand that. It does seem awful that they just kept shooting. And when the guy was face down on the ground, bleeding out into the gutter, and they kept shooting a couple of times, that seemed like a bit much. Obviously.
And then they don't render medical assistance,
right.
which bothers. That's part of the suit.
I would like to know. Maybe they looked at him and realized that he was dead, and they needed an ambulance or they needed a hearse. They didn't need that it would have been pointless. Medical aid could you render somebody who's been shot X number of times? I don't know the answer to that, but was there anything they could have done? Could they have saved his life after they had
officers that arrived later on the scene did try to render medical assistance, chest palpitations or whatever. If nothing else, for show, one of the officers said, be careful what you say.
Right.
For show, I would have still just rendered some medical assistance on the corpse just to it seems so dismissive of that human being that was there a moment ago that you would step over him and then ask your buddies if they're okay. There was one other thing that came out in the reporting on this, which I'd never thought about before. But say you have four officers confronting an individual. Each of the officers has to justify their use of their firearm.
It can't just be one gets shot, we all shoot?
Right. So you get to fire if you have all of the things that you need in place in order to fire. But just because your buddy's unloading 50 times doesn't – you have to make an independent assessment. And the assessment can't be, well, he's firing because maybe he's making a mistake. So you are held responsible for your decision to use your weapon, which makes a lot of sense here. I can imagine in the 41 seconds of adrenaline where it's bam, 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 to ask an officer to make that determination – that's above my pay grade.
Right. And that's what I was just overall getting at, that if Dexter Reed really did fire 17 shots, I think that is a different calculus than him maybe firing one or two. If there is continuous gunfire out of a car at officers, even after one was shot or during which one was shot, that does change a little bit. It does not change the investigation that needs to happen into why this stop was originally made. None of the stuff afterwards matters. Or it matters. It doesn't change what important work that needs to be done there to figure out why.
This may explain why the officer who shot the most times had said, did he shoot first? And then the woman who has the body cam says, don't say anything.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Because he's going to have a hard time defending his use of the weapon. I would back up, though, to the very beginning. I agree with you about counting the shots and the motive. I can't put myself in that space. I have no police training. But I wonder about the initial elements of the stop and how they contributed to what happened. The lawsuit said one thing that I had not seen before and that we haven't mentioned so far, and that is that the cop sideswiped his car first. I didn't realize that, but when you see the video, there's a dent in the side of the car, and they said it was a pretty new car, and I was sort of surprised by that. If that just happened, that's interesting. They pull around the front of him to block him off in the way carjackers do, right? Then the carjackers block you. You can't go forward. They jump out of their car with guns. Did they shout police? They had a flashing light, I guess, but I just followed a fake police car on the highway the other day. I was amazed at it. It had a Chicago Police Memorial plate, so it had a police insignia, but it wasn't an M plate. And it had the antenna, and it had the big flashy mirrors, and it had tinted windows and all that. It wasn't a cop, because you could tell by the plate. But at any rate, did they jump out and say that they were police? Why did they jump out with their guns? And the question that Eric has asked in past shows, why is a tactical unit stopping anybody for a seatbelt violation? Initiating the stop contributed to the result, and we should know how much that contributed and how much the missteps, if there were missteps at the beginning, led to an almost inevitable conclusion.
Yeah, every traffic stop I've ever seen, the cop pulls up in a conventional violation, equipment violation, whatever, they pull up behind you.
Yes.
But there was something about this stop that made them cut him off. I did not hear that they had sideswiped him. It was a very aggressive stop. They came out with their guns, not blazing, but they came out pointing their guns at him or at the vehicle. I'm not sure they were pointing right at him. So there was something going on, and that's what I think. Yeah, I mean, I've brought this up before. It needs to be answered. Why did they pull him over? And last week in the Picayune Sentinel, I took a look at the video and sort of looked at it frame by frame as to how they could have possibly seen that he was not wearing a seatbelt. It made no sense. So there's something else going on here, and I think I'd like the police to be candid about it. Like, well, we'd heard something about this car, or I don't know. I mean, or we just, maybe they just got to say, hey, we see a young black man driving a car, we pull him over. I mean, maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know.
Someone told me there's a video that starts about 2 minutes before. They're not in their car. They jump in the car and take off as if they're after him. They come in from a side street.
Eric posted that video, got it from CWB, right?
Yep.
Last week. And from watching that, I did not understand that the car had sideswiped him. Although it does, the police car does kind of box him in, and you don't normally see that. And of course, we are working on a lack of information. We're not really sure why they stopped him, and that's one of the things that we need to find out. I would just say that the question of whether or not they should be doing pretextual stops is a whole issue in and of itself. to whether or not he knew they were police. The police officer who originally approaches him from the driver's side and speaks to him, and he pulls down the window. It's a female officer. She is clearly not a carjacker. It's quite obvious that they are police.
You're saying women can't be carjackers?
I don't think they're carjackers as much.
I think it's asking a lot for us to expect.
I've seen of carjacking gangs are
that he
all
didn't
men.
Know that was
and
a police officer.
The woman who approaches you and asks you to roll down your window.
There were three cops right there that looked like the police.
It looked like the police, and they had police on their vests on the back anyway. I don't know what was on the front of their vests. Mm-hmm. I can see where he might think they were carjackers, but look. If there are five carjackers surrounding your car, you know what you should do? Give them your damn car and get out of the car and cooperate with them the way you would cooperate with police, because you're not going to prevail in a situation.
Sure, but this
but now we know he had a mental illness issue.
Right.
Yes. He had some history.
Now we know all that.
I don't know what it's like to be driving while black. There's a whole lot of factors in there that I just can't assess. And the whole thing is horrifying to see, and the fact that we're not getting prompt responses, I think, is government not working in our best interest.
I think it's also just we're trying to parse through something on both sides of things that you do not know what it's like until you're in one of those situations. I've never been on the police side where that adrenaline is rushing and you were fired at first. I've never been pulled over I've never been pulled over with four weapons pointed at me, yelling at me to do something. It's easy for me to say, of course I'd comply, and of course I'd be restrained in my shooting back at a suspect. But until you're in that, God, who knows?
Well, one doesn't cancel out the other. Both things can be true. Mm-hmm. The police could have acted way too aggressively. That, Lord, if there's ever an example of where you need to de-escalate rather than escalate a situation, this would be it. This was the antithesis of what we're asking the police to do these days. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that is equally true and doesn't cancel that out is don't fire at the police.
Right.
Cooperate with the police. Eric wants you to cooperate with the people trying to steal your car. Self-preservation should be the key. The big takeaway for me in the absence of more information this week is that de-escalation point. That is just so discouraging that the police, for whatever reason, acted so aggressively that not only is Dexter Reed dead, but one of them almost could have been killed.
We didn't hear Mayor Johnson say what you just said. Why, I appreciate agree with the compassion for officers shot on line of duty. Sadly, one of the good guys was killed just a couple days ago.
Right.
But I would have liked to hear the mayor say, when is the police department going to get serious about the de-escalation training? This looks just like the Laquan McDonald shooting on the face of it. We'll find out the backstory. But I don't want to preside over another press conference talking about either a resident or a police officer shot in an instance that could have been de-escalated with proper training. Let's keep going.
I want to push back a little bit. It's not like Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald was walking away from police. He wasn't shooting at them. And
that's right. That's
right. And I feel like, I don't think Dexter Reed would be dead today if he had not shot the police. If he just sat in his car, refused to roll down the window, they weren't going to shoot him. The fact that it's pretty obvious from the video that he fired at the police officers, and that's just not going to go well.
Right.
Laquan McDonald was walking away from the officer who shot him.
I would say
that's
a parallel,
right. Just the intensity of it is the parallel.
Maybe
the
so, but there's also a parallel in that if they stick with that was a seatbelt violation, and we later discover that it wasn't, the police uniformly lied in Laquan McDonald case. And Eric, you last week said you don't believe the police are telling the truth. I don't think I'm misquoting you here.
No, you're absolutely right there. I don't think they are, but about why they stopped him.
Disquieting, too. So today is the off day. I don't know why they're taking Wednesdays off on the Trump trial. Do you?
I don't.
Is it typical in a case like this? Not that we've ever had a case like this.
Is there a holiday? I don't.
The judge in that case specifically hears a certain type of cases on Wednesdays. Ah. He stops the Trump trial and does this whole separate thing on Wednesdays.
Wow. Wow.
It's weird because often they do that in trials that I've covered on Fridays, where they'll go Monday through Thursday and then and the jury gets a long weekend, the attorneys get a long weekend. Wednesday is pretty weird. It's executive time, if I have for.
they stop for a dentist appointment on Monday. You couldn't change that as a juror?
I I'm amazed that they even
get Wednesday. So root canal, maybe, I guess.
It would just seem to me that given the timeline that we're all thinking about and the length this case could go, is it too much to ask everybody to be there 5 days a week?
Well, this judge is moving things pretty quickly. No one thought jury selection would be done in a week. It was. Opening statements were done before noon on the first day. You got to a witness, even with only 30 minutes left. I think that, yes, it's a, you know, for people that just want to see this thing move along, it's a bummer, but
John,
he's moving
fast. Could you be a fair juror?
Yes. Yes.
Kate, could you be a fair juror?
I actually think I could. Yeah.
I won't doubt anybody's answer to this. Marge?
That's a tough question. You know, my answer is, yeah, I think I could. And I'm interested in a better understanding of the law, which you would get as a juror. I do know from covering trials that when you're, which I only did a few times in my reporting career, but if you're in every single day, you see a very different story than most of the general news recaps by nature of recap, right? So you get a different perspective. You're in the courtroom all day, every day, and I don't really know what that would be like in the Trump trial. Mm-hmm. But I think I would not be selected because I have too much information and too much personal progressiveness about
Eric,
me.
Could you
I'm guessing your social media trail, Marge, is as damning as mine would be for as a prospective
yeah,
juror. I don't think I could be fair to Trump. I loathe him so much that it would be very hard for me to vote to acquit him, even if he were charged with something absurd. I mean, honestly, as a juror, I would not want someone like me on the jury if I were Donald
Which may be a different answer, but to a different question. No. But I mean,
I do want to just point out that I too loathe him. I don't want to.
Now you can't. Well, now you're not serving on it.
I think honestly, in the sense that I could convict him because I'd, you know, be fine, or let him off because I don't. I'm old school reporter. I believe that you should attempt to find as objective a truth as you can.
Yeah, I think the defense.
I'll tell you my fantasy for this trial, which will probably disqualify me again and again as a juror. But has anyone watched the Curb Your Enthusiasm by any chance? The finale, where Larry David finds himself on trial for giving someone a bottle of water in Atlanta while they wait in line, which is illegal.
To vote.
And he's a big hero for having done that. But then they convict him on the basis of a sort of this is your life recap of all the times he's been a jerk, all the times he's cheated somebody, all the time he's been gleeful about other people's suffering, all the times he's been a narcissist. And I would like to see that in the Trump trial. You're not sure he did this as a way to interfere with the election results? Well, let me show you all the other stuff he's done in his long history of being a con artist. Yeah, I couldn't be a fair juror.
No. John, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say I'd actually worry that the defense would want me so much because I think sometimes when we try and check our own biases, you almost overstep.
I think the media does that. The mainstream media does that left and right.
Exactly.
I think they go out of their way to present things that bear no relation to the truth, but that's what the other side is saying, and they examine it without dismissing it for its lack of truthiness.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, truthiness is really supposed, that's a Stephen Colbert saying, of course, and it actually supposed to mean things that are not true and just sort of sound true.
They asked members of the jury now, as well as the alternates, where do you get your news? I don't know if you guys saw the box display that I have, but one of the sitting jurors, when asked for, gosh, there must be 15 different sites here, BBC, CNBC, CNN, Daily Mail, Facebook, Fox News. They don't have ABC, CBS, NBC, but they do have MSNBC. They have Truth Social, The New York Times, Fox News, X, Twitter is on here. Okay, as an example. Where do you get your news? One of the jurors said the only box they checked was Truth Social. One of the jurors said the only source they use for news is Fox News. 8 of the 12 said New York Times. No overlap for those three, by the way. And one of the jurors said their exclusive source for news is Twitter. One wonders how a person who exclusively gets their news from Truth Social will judge Donald Trump's guilt or innocence in this case. Hopefully fairly. Hopefully that's a person who said, well, I'm a fan of Donald Trump, the same way we loathe Donald Trump maybe on this panel. But
say it that way.
The higher calling is guilt or innocence. If you really love the United States, you won't just throw Donald Trump in because you loathe him. O.J. Simpson, the late O.J. Simpson, didn't go to jail for killing people. So that's the principle that we're trying to aspire to here. Half of the people dismiss themselves
out of hand,
presumably because they were not fans of Donald Trump, not because they were such fans that they disqualified themselves.
Right, right, probably.
Or they were looking for a way out of being on.
Just didn't want to do it, period.
That could last for a month or more, right? I mean, they said this trial could go on for quite a while. And, you know, being a juror is very disruptive. So
several people have clearly just feared the, you know, getting you know, doxxed.
Particularly since the former president continues to do exactly what they told him not to do, comment on the jurors and the prosecutors and the judge and their families 11 times as of today. Wednesday is the count. And I don't know that putting Donald Trump in jail for contempt of court would be a wise move.
No.
The prosecutors, one of them wondered out loud if, in fact, that's what he wants. Ultimately, what Donald Trump wants is to be president again. And you can be elected president from jail. And would it help or hurt his campaign if they threw him in jail? You can imagine him doing the calculus on that.
Maybe it's the other way around. What he wants is to stay out of jail. And the only way he can do that is to be elected president again.
He really doesn't want to attend this trial, right? So maybe what he's hoping is to not get sent to jail, but to be not allowed in court. And then he can go do whatever he wants to do, including campaigning.
I wonder if he's not angling for a mistrial, that he's not hoping that this trial will have to start again. And that, you know, given the way courts work, it's going to push it back into, you know, late fall.
Because of what, Eric?
Winter. Well, just because he doesn't want to be sitting in the dock when he should be campaigning.
I mean, what would the grounds be? What would the grounds be for a mistrial?
Well, one of his attorneys say something that's completely out of bounds. And
I think we're overthinking this. I think he's angry.
He's just being Trump.
He doesn't like it. He doesn't meet authority all that much that talks down to him, and he's meeting it here, and it's driving him crazy, and he's spouting off about it.
Let me ask you, I saw John Hansen, you shook your head no or said no when they said Trump shouldn't be thrown in jail for.
I just worry about the spectacle of it all, right?
Right. I do too, except I think one of the things that's being established in this trial is that we treat everybody the same under the law. And I don't think that that's necessarily true in a lot of ways, but you can't give him a special break because he's Donald Trump, right? If another defendant in a similar trial were to be saying the things and doing the things that he's doing, what would the judge do? And the judge should do exactly what he would do under other circumstances, not considering that this is a big, famous political candidate, but he has got to make the decision, like, if this is contempt of court, this is how I deal with contempt of court.
Maybe he is. I don't really know what – I don't have examples, right? I do know that the ultimate goal is to try to dissuade the person from being in contempt of court.
Yeah.
And a $1,000 fine ain't going to do that.
That's what I was laughing at. $1,000 doesn't get it
so
done.
So fine him $1 million for each one. I mean, that would probably create just the same amount of spectacle as he's trying to be silenced. But if you're trying to do it as a ratio from your net worth, that would fit the bill.
I don't know that amount is not set in the law.
Maybe
it may just be a statutory thing because good luck getting it.
Maybe he'd like a night in jail. Like in My Cousin Vinny, doesn't he love the night of sleep? It's his first good night of sleep in a long time.
I'm going to stay in prison tonight. Maybe I finally get some sleep. Doing good, huh?
Trump has made a career of tying up wrongdoing in court so that he's never held accountable. He's good at it. He knows what he's doing to delay trials, to maybe to get a mistrial. I don't know. But to be the maltreated, you know, if I hear one more time the unprecedented anything about Trump as if it's wrong because it's unprecedented, he's unprecedented. You know, you're out of order, sir. And so you will be treated correspondingly. And if it's unprecedented, you could change that by behaving a little more like a leader.
I know this trial doesn't get as much attention. I mean, it's getting attention now, but of the four was probably the least thought about one. I don't know if it's a slam dunk as much as other people do, having read through the opening and closing arguments. It's kind of complicated what the prosecutors are alleging to make this a felony. You have to somehow show that there's another crime being committed and that the conspiracy builds up to that crime. And I think the defense opening statements, while I maybe disagree with them, were somewhat
This is what politicians do to try and get elected. There's hush money cases all the time. That in and of itself is not illegal. You're allowed to pay people not to sell their story to certain places. Yellow journalism or whatever you want to call it of the Inquirer is all part of normal political sphere. How is this all that different? You know, and I disagree with some of the things. There's a paper trail about the money. And, you know, Michael Cohen was clearly acting as a repayment of this plan. But it may not be that slam dunk as some people think.
You might be right about that, but it's not a hush money case. It's an election interference case.
Therein lies the federal crime.
The media calls it a hush money case, the more they lead to the kind of confusion you express.
Well, and also they didn't properly categorize it, right? So it's a campaign finance violation.
Yes.
A fairly serious one. So yeah, I mean, I agree with John Hansen, which is that you can make it sound fairly innocuous or normal. I mean, like, you don't like it, but yeah, you know, hush money for, you know, catch and kill stories of the National Enquirer. What the National Enquirer did, I don't believe is illegal. I mean, if you don't want to have a story published and you pay for it and you can then kill it, which is what they allegedly did with Stormy Daniels and what McDougal was the other
Karen
woman?
McDougal. Yeah,
they're not on trial.
Exactly.
They're not on trial. And David Pecker has been granted immunity, if there is any question about that, their journalism is very sleazy. I would love to see the Inquirer put on trial for telling us that Hillary Clinton was dying back in 2016. I mean, it was really grotesque.
I forgot about
that. New York Times Sunday Magazine a couple of weeks ago had one of the people that was working for Pecker writing some of these stories do a sort of confessional. He feels terrible about what they were doing, but he was part and parcel of it. That catch and kill business is fascinating, and I hadn't really thought much about it or heard much about it until we heard about these cases. And the defense admitted as much. He said, I got news for you. Influencing elections is not against the law. This is democracy. It's not against the law, what we're doing here.
Question is, did Trump pay for it as a cover-up so that it wouldn't damage his election? If independently there was a National Enquirer reason to do it, that's up to them. But if Trump paid for it, which is what Cohen is claiming, then that is a violation.
That's election interference.
These are all the dots they have to connect.
Yes. Exactly. And Hope Hicks is going to be the witness I want to see. She worked for Trump, and was she in on any conversations about this before or after? Because she'll be more credible than Cohen, I think.
Defense attorneys just have to lay little seeds, though, right? That lay some doubt to connecting all the dots. If every juror read and understand every part of the law and followed the story the prosecutor made, I think you'd have a lot more people in jail. The defense attorneys need to just kind of do little seeds of doubt that don't quite connect everything to the dots or make it seem almost excusable. Maybe not be something you agree with, but that's a jury doesn't have to tell you why they didn't come to a guilty verdict.
Well, that's why I brought up these new sources. I mean, if the whole process seems so tortured that it seems like you guys are working way too hard to make this case, then maybe the guy that gets his news exclusively from Fox X or Truth Social is going to say, you know what, they're working too hard on this. It's too much work either for me to understand, or it's been too much work for you to make a case. This really shouldn't be a crime.
I could also see a hung jury.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you have your Truth Social guy who
stop the count,
who just says, you know, I can't vote to convict this. This is crap. And you can have 11 jurors saying he's guilty if you got one angry holdout.
You think after one day of deliberations, he says stop, no more.
Who's the hey?
Donald Trump.
Oh.
We've counted for one day. That's all the counting we need to do. You guys I'm making a joke about the 2020 election here.
Yes. Oh, that was very funny.
It's a pretty good one, actually.
It wasn't, but thank you,
Marjorie. Could I just throw in, if people are interested in following the Trump trial, but maybe they don't really want to watch or read the super nitty-gritty news accounts, Jonathan Alter is doing a really interesting series on it on his Substack, which is called Old Goats. Jonathan Alter, which you guys probably know, worked for years and years for Newsweek, for instance. He's actually from Chicago. He managed by lottery to get one of the few coveted seats right there in the right there in the courtroom, right close to Trump, actually.
Is anyone doing dramatic reenactments? I mean, they put the transcripts out every single night, which is kind of surprising. Should we just read it? Have Bob Surratt and you just do a little?
We'll reenact it. Do you think that the reporting of Trump nodding off, falling asleep, do you think that was appropriate or relevant or necessary information?
No, but when you call someone Sleepy Joe for 4 years, your only job is to stay awake.
Oh, good one.
I think that's fair. I think that's plenty fair. Yeah. And to your earlier point, though, about reenactment, there's a guy in Chicago theater for many years, Michael Martin, used to do this series called Verbatim Verboten, where he would get transcripts from interesting trials and local actors or celebrities or something would perform them as a live read. And actually, I did one once with Terry Hemmert of WXT.
Oh, nice. Nice.
We did the exchange between the woman who blew the whistle on Bill Clinton and the intern. Oh, my God, the names are escaping me.
Linda Trump or Trump.
Linda Tripp.
Linda Tripp. And Monica Lewinsky. So I, you know, Monica Lewinsky and I walk in with a Gap bag, supposedly has my dress in it. If you remember all the details, Terry is Linda Tripp trying on a wire to get information. Anyway.
Who were you in that then? Were you Monica?
Yeah.
Oh nice. My gosh.
I wore a beret and had a Gap bag.
Oh, no.
How fun.
That's
and lipstick, famous lipstick, right?
Oh, yeah. Right,
yeah. So anyway, right. Michael Martin moved to New Orleans, and I'm not sure he's still with us, actually. But I wish someone would do exactly what you said. I think some of this transcript would be pretty fun.
The courtroom sketches are interesting, too. They're not doing Donald Trump any favors with these pictures. Shouldn't this thing be on TV?
Yes.
Yes and no. I get why they don't do it. I don't want performances in.
But now you're relying on. So now you're relying on Maggie Haberman to tell you that he fell asleep. And
right.
What's the bias there? Why don't you just let me watch it?
Yeah,
you
know? I see both sides.
If we have the audio, live audio of the Supreme Court,
That's fair.
Have live audio and or video of this.
Right.
I don't know how much more performative it would be than it already is. The
True.
Stage is set. And that's my last word of wisdom. Any last thoughts from any of you all as we wrap this up?
Go Bears.
We live in the greatest city in the world.
I know.
This is the greatest podcast in the world.
We have great food, great people, and great economic analysts who I hope will independently take a look at the Bears.
Great podcasts. Yes, yes. I do want to work on that opening line. So what did we come up with? This was I had something like the podcast for people who know and care about Chicago, for people who know and care about Chicago. But Eric or Marge, one of you abbreviated it. It's the podcast for people who know and care about Chicago.
It's obvious that
we are super smart. All right, that's Eric Zorn and Marge Halperin and Kate Plies. And I'm sitting right next to my friend John Hansen. We are produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
That was fun.
Sure. I'm glad you could slip in there at the last minute.
I had to bring up some gloves for the Bears. Come on.
We got a little shouty.
We needed a little of that
in this podcast.
We got a little shouty. Okay.
All right.
I actually don't care where they play. But I think it's cool.
It's a TV show.
I do think it actually is true that it's just the lakefront or Arlington Heights. Although the Bears don't really come out and say that, right? Because they were all about how much they love.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.